Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That was possibly, actually, no, not even possibly, definitely the weakest episode of AEW Dynamite in 2023. That is a criticism of the episode. I'm not even going to pull any punches. I'm not going to say, yeah, but the amazing standard of Dynamite in 2023 so far, even if it was a little bit, of course, would be the weakest. No, this was an objectively below average show. I'm Ollie Davis. I'm joined by Luke Owen, DAD. Welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast review of AEW Dynamite. If you haven't already, press the subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, leave your thoughts down below with what you thought of this episode, and send in your Omega chats to WrestleTalk.com/support. We'll read out every single one of them over $5.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, are you looking to me now to talk?
Yeah, talk about how much you hate it.
Well, do you know what? I mean, if I may say something positive about this show, because I know, like, I know I'm not allowed to because of the anti-AEW bias and the anti-AEW rhetoric that runs throughout WrestleTalk. I feel like I am being silenced in able to say positive things.
Oh, I'm incredibly toxic.
About this show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you did bully me slightly before we came on air to tell me, don't you dare say something.
If you can't see it, but I've spray painted all of Luke Owen's bottom half green because that's how you bully people.
I mean, it's not actually, I mean, specifically, you can't just say my bottom half, just my bum.
It was just the bum.
Yeah.
I wanted it to make it look like you'd done a comedy fart.
I did have a sign at one point that said, I thought this episode was okay, but you tore it up.
Then I pulled you over the desk.
Yeah, and sat me in this chair. Then sprayed my bum a little bit green.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then Ruby Soho scared me away.
I thought this main event was fine.
Cool.
I really did. And you know what? I liked what it set out to do. Mm. And I thought that it actually accomplished exactly what it set out to do. And I actually think that the booking of it was very solid and very good. It's just, it's a story that no one particularly cares about and therefore has gotten over. Do you know what it reminds me of? The first year of the Dark Order.
Mm.
Remember that main event angle that they did where they destroyed the Elite? And everyone was like, ah, worst Dynamite of the year. That was awful. But really, it was just an angle that no one particularly cared about. It was a well-executed angle, just not one that people cared about. I think that's the same thing here. It was a good story. It's a story that is, I'm going to remove the word good there.
Mm-hmm.
It is a story that is being told well. It is just a story that no one cares about.
Yeah, it's or a crap story that's being told coherently. It's difficult because for the women's division main event, I've not got anything to say really because I've said it all for the last couple of months. I think Saraya and Tony's act is massively one-dimensional. And the sort of, we are bad guys spraying people is the same level of just rubbishness. Mm-hmm. I remember when the Riot Squad just used to chuck condiments over people.
And it's ironic, really, because the person they're trying to recruit is Ruby Soho.
Always think that. The main event, having this as the main event, cool, we put the women in the main event, but at the same time, this story doesn't justify it. It felt like it was building to a crescendo where Ruby would pay off all this intrigue.
I never thought that.
I mean, the crowd certainly did, because
I don't think the crowd did either.
It ended like a fart.
Well, I mean, you are right. The bloodline should have just attacked Sami Zayn the week after he joined the group, because, you know, well, we know where the angle's heading, so we may as well just pull it off now.
No. I am not into the women's division story, unfortunately. My problem is with the rest of the episode. I think if you put this, it is nowhere near as good as all the episodes we've had this year, but not much is, because I think Dynamite has been consistently terrific since the start of January. It's the follow-up to the tag title change
thought
was massively misjudged. Presenting the Acclaimed in a comedy match against Jeff Jarrett, whose dad had just died. I'm not saying they buried Jeff Jarrett or anything. I'm just like, how can I cheer the Acclaimed against this guy?
Well, the crowd certainly cheered the Acclaimed more than they did Jarrett, because Jarrett's such a good heel that the crowd still booed him, despite the fact his dad was dead.
I can't argue Jeff Jarrett's awesomeness. I tried. He convinced me I was wrong. I will forever apologize. But the rest of the episode had decent bits, like newsworthy bits. I thought Wardlow's promo was excellent. Christian returned. Really enjoyed the tornado tag. But I just feel like as soon as Danielson, that story of Danielson having banger after banger after banger, wrapped up, it's kind of exposed how little AEW has going on story-wise. And we are now a few weeks out from Revolution, and this was a very underwhelming show. And I don't think now is the time to go into your underwhelming gear. Now's the time where you're like, boom, this match, boom, this match.
It is remarkable, because I said to you this morning, it feels like a show that is not building to a pay-per-view. And yet this was the only episode in the last, you know, I would argue 2 months that's actually built towards the next pay-per-view outside of Danielson MJF. Because Danielson MJF has been... they've been building that for 2 months. They've been telling a story over a handful of months to set you up the main event of Revolution. But that is the only match that Tony has really been... you could argue Mox and Hangman, I would suppose, actually, yeah. But everything else has just been... all of a sudden on this show, it was just like, and here's what the other match is. Here's what another match is. Here's what another match is. Here's what another match is. I would even say they've not built Wardlow Joe, because Wardlow was gone for a month and a bit.
Yeah.
They did the haircutting angle, then he was off TV and Joe went into a different feud with Darby Allin. Then Wardlow comes back, you know, 2 weeks ago, and then it's like, okay, that's a Revolution match. So it feels like it's a company that's not building towards a pay-per-view on a show that did the most to build a pay-per-view.
Yeah. I agree. On paper, this was a very heavy pay-per-view building episode. But watching it, why does it feel so middling? I don't know. I think Tony and AEW have always had this philosophy of a sports-based program, where I would argue a lot of AEW is thrust forward narratively by matches that are booked.
Yeah. Don't worry. Ignore Terry when she comes in.
Ignore Terry.
Hi, Terry. Thank you, Terry. I've been summoned, yeah. Can you just pull the focus a little bit for us? Thank you.
Of course.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
It's thrust forward narratively by these matches are being made. Mm-hmm. Not so much storylines and characters driving things, although they do sometimes play a part. But now that is... sorry, Terry adjusting the focus completely distracted me from my amazing point.
I know. Well, I was a bit distracted earlier because I saw a lot of people being like, I think the shot's a bit blurry. And I was like, oh, it's because it was set up for something else yesterday.
It's also because me and Luke are getting older. And we thought one way to cheat age was rub Vaseline all over the lens, like we're early 40s Hollywood starlets.
Yeah, as I approach my early 40s.
Mm-hmm. but yeah, I just feel like AEW and Tony Khan as a booker, he's been doing this 3 years now, amazingly well for the most part. I feel like the promotion is running out of a bit of steam narratively, creatively. Matches cannot complain about. Incredible matches all the time. But there's only so many amazing matches I can take. I can't believe I'm saying this.
Isn't that a mad thing? So yeah. Trevor made this point. Trevor Damon on Twitter made this point last week, where on CJ, thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
When you had Danielson and Rouge and Takeshita and MJF, And like Trevor made the point, it was like, 10 years ago, if you had one of those matches on a show, that would have been like a tape trading thing of like everyone would have been talking about, do you remember that? And we had a TV show last week where we had two of them on the same show. And it was just like, it's a fine episode of Dynamite, I guess.
And the Elite versus AR Fox and Top Flight. I thought last week's episode was pretty decent, especially in rings. Phenomenal. But this week, there was no great matches. There were good matches.
Good matches.
Not to AEW's standard that they've set this year. Sort of a victim of their own success.
Oh, yeah.
But when you remove those mind-blowing, you know, just 5 years ago would be five-star matches, like, there's not actually much going on here that I can sink my teeth into.
And I think that's what it then exposes the main event and has sort of like, I think, put a bit of a microscope on it to be like, maybe this was a problem main event then. And actually this main event angle sucks and the storyline sucks and the in-ring action sucked because there was nothing else on the show to distract a viewer to be like, well, maybe that wasn't as great as it could have been, but we also had this amazing match down here. When you don't have that, all of a sudden it's like, oh, actually, that women's main event scene isn't all that great. And actually, yeah, the tag scene isn't great. They just put the belts on the ass boys to get a reaction from the internet. And that worked. But it has also massively undermined the Acclaim. They feel less over this week, and the tag scene as a whole does not feel as complete as it once did. When you don't have something to distract a viewer.
Yeah.
And I think this show sort of exposes that somewhat.
Just to concentrate specifically on the women's main event, because we'll cover everything else segment by segment. Some of it was great, most of it was middling, some of it was bad. So we had a three-way between Britt Baker, Ruby Soho, and Toni Storm. Saraya still not really getting physical all that often, though she did interfere in this match.
That's probably part of her contract. She is a special attraction as opposed to a regular in-ring character.
She's wrestled one singles match, and then she's had that tag match where she didn't get involved.
She had a tag match on Rampage.
Oh, yeah.
She has had matches.
Yeah, it just feels like she's, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like the momentum of Saraya / Paige when she joined has been fulfilled.
No, but she is also, you know, she is Sting. In the terms of, you know, you save her for the pay-per-views. And also, when you only have one women's match a week, it is hard
to
get, you know, it's she can't have a Danielson run coming back from an injury because there's only one match a week and you can't have it every week because we've got 15 other women that we need to, I don't want to use the word service because it makes it sound a bit lewder than I mean, but we've got 15 women other women we need to service in our roster, and I'm not giving you a second match. So you can wrestle once every 3 months.
Saraya, I know I paid you all the money, but the baddies need to wrestle. What are the baddies going to do?
I've got to try and tell this story. I've got to do Jade Cargill versus Red Velvet again. There's no other way I can further this story.
What do you want me to do, Saraya?
The gravel we won't row unless I do this.
People need to know about Kira Hogan and how she's going to rejoin the baddies to turn on them again the week later.
And the other one, whose name no one remembers.
Layla Gray. True fact.
Sounds like a porn star. I think that's... But I will, again... I want to be the positive voice in the room, even though I keep being silenced by this anti-AEW bias that has infected WrestleTalk.
I have been so positive since the start. And I would even argue from Winter Is Coming.
Look, I know
and the Ricky Starks
rights. I know Triple H is paying your way and he's sending you those little royalty checks so that you can say nice things about Raw and SmackDown and the pay-per-views, which I've paid for a very nice jumper.
Well, actually, I was thinking about this on the way into work this morning. The hottest thing in wrestling right now is a storyline.
Sure is.
I mean, the most compelling that storyline is in the in-ring angles. The matches are almost window dressing.
No one is talking about the actual match between Roman and Owens, just the post-match that came afterwards. Yeah.
And a lot of the matches.
No one talks about War Games. They just talk about the ending of War Games.
The 100 tag matches of various combinations of Usos and Sammy. No, it's all about what happened backstage and how Roman was interacting with them. Those aren't bell-to-bell in-ring bangers.
Yeah.
The stuff that makes people coming back week after week and getting excited about seeing matches are those storylines.
Absolutely.
And I'm just getting the payoff every week. Which hasn't been a problem until now, because AEW also had really compelling characters, exciting feuds, and some stories told over time.
And maybe that is what you have with this main event here, because you have set up a story in that you've got one team over here, which is Storm and Soraya. They're the invaders, the outsiders. I didn't even call them the freelancers at one point, even though both of them are all elite. They're under contract. And then on the other side, you've got the AEW originals in Hayter and Baker. And both of them are sort of not trying to... I mean, well, one team is certainly trying to recruit Ruby to their ranks, while the other one is saying, I don't think you should be joining them because we're trying to do something better over here. Ruby's literally stuck in the middle of this feud, which is why I think a triple threat was a really smart booking choice to further this story along. Because you have one representative from either act and the person literally stuck in the middle. And they told that story very well throughout the match, which is that Storm and Baker constantly sort of butting heads and trying to get Ruby on their side. And Ruby was just out there to win a match. Because Ruby wants to win matches to progress up a ranking system. Don't mention the ranking system.
I thought they actually canonically got rid of it.
They did. Yeah, it was like, don't mention the rankings. So
the way you advance now is through two battle royals,
or just winning the same match over and over again. The trio's titles, but like, so she's just winning a match because she wants to go after the title. She wants to be a champion within AEW. So you had quite a lot of a really, really solidly told story there, but there also wasn't a big angle afterwards. The angle was Ruby won by throwing out Toni Storm into Soraya and pinning Britt Baker. And then afterwards, Soraya having a go at her, Jamie Hayter's lifting up the belt, and Ruby saying, do you know what? That's what I'm doing. I'm letting you all know
I'm hungry.
I want to eat the championship. Once I've had my nom-noms, it goes into my tum-tum. So she was making that signal. So I think we are either going to be getting Soho Hayter in a singles match at Revolution, or Soho Hayter and Soraya in a triple threat, and you sort of mirror the story that you've told here, but with the other two parts of this quintet, and maybe that's where you do the big angle, and then that's the story that you're talking about there, which is this, you know, the bloodline is not about the in-ring action, it's about the story, but we're not even getting any of that, so we're not getting great in-ring action or the story itself, so maybe we'll get that at the pay-per-view.
I would just say do the story now.
But then we may as well just never really have stories, because you may as well just like you set up one thing and then just pay it off the following week.
No, you can tell a story and just make it good. It's easy.
So what you're saying is here, just Tony, just make it good.
I think that's what it boils down to.
Do you know, I mean, when you put it in those really succinct terms, I don't know why he hasn't thought of that sooner.
Well, it's because he's not paying attention to his own product.
Do you know the most amazing thing? It was going through Reddit, having a look at the Reddit forum, Squared Circle, and all of this to see what the mood was around this show. And a lot of the negativity towards this show was around this main event angle. The one thing I thought was so stunning about that is there's this new thing that wrestling fans have decided this is what's going to fix AEW. They need writers. Can you imagine? We are living in a wrestling world now where WWE has convinced fans the way to solve wrestling is with writers. When our era of wrestling, it was all about like writers are the things that are killing this industry. And what you need is just one booker.
Well, scripted promos were awful for a lot of people. Some people did better with scripted promos.
Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, well, let's see what everyone thoughts on the Omega chats. Restore.com/support. Send in your thoughts there. We'll read out the ones over $5. BM Whitehouse 76 says, I like how the basis of Tony Storm's heel turn is that the AEW originals don't know what it's like to be successful in WWE, when the most notable thing she did in WWE was take pies in the face and get squashed by Charlotte. Something doesn't add up.
She was a former NXT UK Women's Champion and a Mae Young Classic winner.
I don't think, but that's not the stuff. You don't put that facetiously.
Of course I am.
Okay, thank you.
I was talking about things that literally don't matter.
Kevin, Destination, Ruby's going solo. I like that Ruby won so she could become number one contender, but this story of outsiders versus homegrown is so messed up right now. I don't quite understand much of anyone's character. Also, no Brian match, so no. So -5 stars.
-5 stars.
This wasn't for anything, though. If this was a three-way for the number one contendership, I think I would have preferred that.
But that's like a lot of matches are. You win matches and it builds up your stakes to put you towards title belts. In the same way that Jungle Boy didn't win a number one contendership around Brian Cage, he won a singles match, and that has moved him up some rankings towards becoming a singles champion.
Yeah, but if Jungle Boy versus Brian Cage was the main event without the Christian return, you could see how that would be anticlimactic for an ending.
So you're saying that what you need to say is a number one contendership match at the end of every episode. Otherwise, matches are anticlimactic.
I felt like
this had nothing. You're absolutely right, Ollie. If you just always have contendership matches.
And you know what else? We should have pinfalls before ad breaks. Matt Hennessy says, Cody said recently in an interview that he feels AEW lost their spirit. After the all-out brawl, I do feel AEW has lost their spirit, the magic they once had. For me, AEW lost their spirit after Double or Nothing 22, from Punk beating Paige, to his injury, to the Forbidden Door build, to the never-ending JAS-BCC Eddie feud. I think with AEW, for a long time, I thought I wanted an alternative from WWE, but I just wanted an alternative from Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and Triple H's booking of WWE has given me that. I also think AEW has pushed acts that aren't over, like the Guns. I do think AEW's biggest issue right now is Tony Khan trying to push acts that are not over, like The Firm, or who have the wrong kind of heat, like the Ass Boys and JAS. It's frustrating not seeing acts like Eddie Miro and House of Black on TV over the acts that aren't over.
I don't think I would say that TK is pushing The Firm.
They're just there now.
They're
at
just
this point.
There. Yeah. And like the Ass Boys, I think you could argue JAS are over. Like that, you can't say that JAS have got the wrong kind of heat. JAS are over. I sort of see what you're saying in some aspects, though. I mean, I was the guy that said that Paige should have beaten Punk, but you know, what do I know? I'm the catalyst for everything. But I think that Cody was not saying that AEW lost spirit in that there is some magic thingy. What he is talking about, that all in spirit of we are on a mission to accomplish this. And I still think that there is something in that. It's just you cannot show that every week on TV. It's a different prospect when you're doing a weekly TV show.
Mm-hmm. I always say I think it goes back even a bit further to when Tony bought Ring of Honor. I think you can go back and like, oh, that was the first chink in the armor. First, like, this distraction of the mind. Marcel Art, sadly, AEW has yet to learn how to write storylines for women. They have a lot of depth in the Hangman character arc. It's mainly the women that are one-dimensional. You know what will not be one-dimensional? WXW 16-carat gold in less than 1 month. Seriously, how much Ultra Chats do Dan and I have to spam you with to make you guys attend Europe's greatest wrestling festival? We can't fit it into the schedule. I'm sorry. Not as a word. People are, you know, welcome to take holiday and go over and see it, but
yeah,
we can't go over and not make videos for that long. HDNA33, I think AEW WWE consistently have one good story going, but AEW is riding high off quality matches which now that the shine has worn off, it's the weak booking is becoming more clear. It wasn't weak booking though. It was fantastic booking for almost two solid years.
Mm-hmm. But it's again of, you know, it's what we were saying earlier, like it feels like now the banger matches are almost a distraction tactic from weaker points on the show. Because again, I don't think, and I sort of, you know, alluded to this a little bit earlier, nothing on this show was bad.
Oh, I thought the Acclaim follow-up was bad.
It's not good, it's weak, but it's not bad.
I thought it was bad.
Yeah, which is fair. But I would say there was nothing on this show. Like, I didn't finish a show and I was like, oh, God, that segment was awful. Oh, that interview was awful. Oh, that promo sucked. Nothing like that. But after every segment, I was like, that was okay. That was okay. That's weak. That's okay. And in some ways, that is worse. But, like, I think that sometimes as wrestling fans, we just get a bit fixated on just like, well, it's not five stars, then it's bad. When it's currently at the moment, it's just, it's a bit weak.
I think momentum has a lot to do with this. If your company has a good upswing, sort of mediocre segments get reviewed a lot more favorably. But the last thing we saw from AEW Dynamite before this episode was the Ass Boys winning the titles. So it's a big bit of taste in the mouth that wasn't corrected from the start of this and sort of lingered.
Particularly because, as I said earlier, the only reason the Ass Boys got the belts is because, well, I've got to look at the reaction. And I was making this joke in the office last week when Tempest was asking why did they do it. I said, Tempest, think of the heat, brother.
Finally for now, John Rye. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting a little tired of Tony's booking. I don't understand the direction with the tag titles, the women's division. Maybe I'm wrong, but other than good in-ring wrestling, nothing progresses. They killed Ricky Stark's momentum. Well, that they definitely have done.
Yes, I would 100% agree on. I did have faith. Once he lost to MJF, I was like, but you can clearly see they're going into a Jericho feud and that should do something for him. And early doors, it did do something for him.
He won that great match.
And it just felt like, Ricky's on a bit of a tear now. But then it was like a lot of JAS feuds is that, well, do you know what this needs? 3 more months.
Right, so this episode of AEW Dynamite, please do keep sending in your Omega chats. We'll read out every single one over $5. Opened with an 8-man tag of Orange Cassidy, The Acclaimed, and Daddy Ass versus the TNA boys, Satnam Singh. So, well, he's not TNA, but him, Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, and Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, well, I just call them Team TNA.
Team TNA, yeah.
I had a great fun. I had great fun with this. Yeah. Because this has, this was perfect. Let me tell you why this is perfect. Okay, so the Acclaimed are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're grand and all. Orange Cassidy's incredibly over. He just has to stand there and he's incredibly over. Yeah. Very, very good. Brilliant faces to put against the incredible great heels you have in Team TNA. Jeff Jarrett. It's just, you know, one of the, ain't he great? Jay Lethal is an incredible worker. So you've got your heat magnet in Jeff Jarrett. You've got Jay Lethal in your great worker who also gets heat. You've got Satnam Singh. Crikey, he's tall.
He's a big lad.
He's a big lad. And then you've got Sanjay Dutt.
I love Sanjay Dutt.
Oh, Sanjay Dutt gets in there. Mm-hmm. He's wearing a t-shirt as well as a suit. And he gets, and he just does incredible comedy work. They're a perfect unit. Do you know what isn't perfect? AEW's production, because despite the fact that Satnam Singh is over 7 foot tall, they shoot him to make him look like he's the same height as Orange Cassidy.
Why, it's that new high-angle camera.
It's an error.
I knew it would bite him in the ass.
As such, when he stepped into the ring, they were like, oh, he's 7 foot three. And I was like, is he though? Because he sure don't look it.
If that was WWE, and I'm not saying this is better, I'm just comparing two opposite styles. The camera is looking up from his feet.
Vince knows how to book a giant.
Yeah, as we've seen time and time again with all those successful giants after Andre. I thought Sanjay Dutt's sell job off the orange punch was brilliant.
Uh-huh.
He sort of went backwards like a plank. Fun match, can't deny that. The ending as well, where they had, I can't remember who it was, but there was a setup for the Shiver Sizzler Timbers and Orange Cassidy. They did the little kicks and the low effort kicks, and eventually it was hit, and then the Acclaimed got the win. Fun stuff.
It was fun stuff. It was such a fun opener. I had a grand old time with this.
Any other week, fine stuff. But it comes off the back of the Acclaimed literally just losing. Like, if you watch these episodes back to back with the previous week's episode, the Acclaimed lose, they come out, they do a little, you know, entrance rap where they say, we're going to get our titles back. But the crowd weren't, you know, they reacted, but the Acclaimed have been the most over thing on the show, particularly those raps, for months. They come out, it's a sort of normal entrance pop for people. And then to wrestle a comedy match, and the Ass Boys come out and they just stare at the top of the ramp. I'm like, what is this? Why aren't Caster and Bowens taking this more seriously? As soon as those two come out, they should just run after them and try and beat the crap out of them.
I think the Ass Boys have certainly killed a lot of momentum for, and you know, actually that's not fair. It's not fair to blame the Ass Boys because it's the booking this tag division that has killed the momentum of the Acclaimed. As I said, like, I get why Tony did it. I don't think it's the right reason to have done it. And I don't think it has helped them in any way, shape or form. And in fact, if anything, it did hurt them dramatically.
Well, when they came out, and I got this last week when they won the belts, but I'm like, okay, that's, you know, that was them winning the belts. They feel suddenly so low on confidence. Like last week when they won the belts, I wanted them to go, oh my God, you know, it's ridiculously over the top celebration, but they just kind of back up the ramp. Cool, everyone hates us, legitimately. When they come out here, and is it, I always get them mixed up. I'm pretty sure it's Austin. I think it's great facials. He's a great promo, great seller. They just kind of stood there.
Yeah.
I'm like, where was all this swagger that you've had in the preceding months?
Well, it's easy to want the titles, but the second you get them, it's like, oh, there's a lot of responsibility on my shoulders now.
Oh, I've got to carry these around the airport.
These are heavy things. But no, I think maybe it's the weight of responsibility that you are now the face of the tag team division. In a title win designed to rile up the internet, and the internet was riled up, they're like, oh, it's actually quite a reaction to get.
I don't think, I disagree with your point on that being the sole purpose. I genuinely think Tony Khan wanted to make a new set of guys with the guns, and he thought putting the titles on them was the way to do it. I think that's a massive error. I think it's too soon. I think it's only going to backfire. But you think...
I think it was just done to annoy people.
I don't feel like Tony Khan's that kind of booker.
I think it was done for the heat, brother.
Well... This is all interlinked, so we'll talk about the two segments with the tag belts that happen later on. First off, the Gun Club have a little promo, and it's announced that they will have their first title defense at Revolution, and it will be a three-way, and you'll have two teams. So next week it will be a normal Battle Royal Tag Team.
The customary Revolution Tag Team Battle Royal, I think you'll find.
And then the week after that, we'll have the Casino Battle Royal Tag Team thing. And the winners of those two will make up the other two slots in the three-way. When they announced that, I was like, okay, I hate this every year. I don't know why they do it. But whatever.
I think it's... Is it the customary Revolution Battle Royal where it's the last two teams, the ones that make up the thing? Because it was that last
No, that's for the Diamond Battle. Isn't that the Diamond Ring Battle Royal? But this year it was different because MJF didn't compete.
Because it was also a triple threat at Revolution last year as well. Mm. It was Red Dragon and the Young Bucks. Mm.
It's a tradition I don't care about.
Yeah,
and I think it's clunky.
Me too, actually.
Clunky
yeah.
as all sin.
Also, like when you look at who are in the Battle Royal, I wrote down the names. It's Best Friends, Team TNA, the Lucha Brothers, Butcher and Blade, the JAS, Dark Order, and Neeson Daivari. Suddenly you look at that, it's like, where did all the tag teams go?
The Trios division.
But even then, that's House of Black. Mm-hmm. Where are the what's the other tag team swallowed up? I suppose Top Flight, I guess.
Top Flight, Young Bucks. Blackpool Combat Club aren't in there?
Yeah. And I think we should
no
be,
FTR, of
no
course.
No FTR.
The
I
firm.
Think maybe they'll be in the Casino Battle Royal. That's what I don't know, is whether or not we have got the same teams going into the second Battle Royal as we have in this one.
AEW's tag division is what used to be really, really deep. But even back then, it was never deep enough to have two separate Battle Royals to crown two different contenders for the Revolution matches. This year, it really doesn't work. But whatever, you're doing it. Okay, I hear that. I'm like, right. So the Acclaimed are going to win one of those matches.
Yeah, particularly because at the end of this match when they won, the Acclaimed stared down the Ass Boys. And I was like, oh, we're still going with that, are we? I'd have probably moved on to something else.
But no, later on, Renee is making an announcement backstage. The Acclaimed come in with Daddy Ass and they announce, like they're really good, vengeful babyface heroes. Well, we're going to make it a four-way at Revolution because we're invoking our automatic rematch clause.
Rubbish writing.
Really bad booking.
That is bad. Although, I get what the intention of this is. They're not stealing a spot from another team.
They wouldn't have to steal it if they won the match.
Well, that's the problem, because they're not in the matches, it would seem.
Book them in the match, then!
Well, yeah, but they're not in the matches, are they? So like, you have to think of a different way around that problem, don't you? And that valiantly, they're not stealing spots from anyone else. They're allowing two other teams. Look, this is going to be a smaller card because we've got an hour-long main event. So we have to get all 100 guys on the card somehow.
Hmm. I thought this was really bad booking. I thought it was a terrible follow-up from last week. Last week, I was like, I don't think this is going to work out. But maybe if they have an absolutely banging... you can go back and watch last week. I think I said, if they have an absolutely banging follow-up at the start of next week's episode, maybe they can make something of this. And this was so far from that. And the idea that the Acclaimed, who have perfect justification to really angrily want that title shot, get it in this way of the lame... automatic rematch clause contractual specification part. So lame.
Yes, that is lame. It is quite weak. Shout out to two lines of commentary, though. There was a point when they were talking about Jerry Jarrett. You know, it's very sad that Jerry Jarrett passed away. And Tony was like, hey, do you know what? Like, Jeffy's a very good worker, even if he is one of the most hated men in wrestling. And Taz just says, and I believe this is a quote, yeah, both in front of the camera and behind the scenes. And the other line that I thought was a really bizarre line is when Orange Cassidy is making his entrance, I think it was Tony Schiavone said, is there a hotter person in the singles division than Orange Cassidy? And I was like, I don't know. Bryan Danielson, yeah. The guy who's going for the top title? Maybe it's him. I don't know.
You can't even blame it for being the ad break on the fight. No. Genuinely, in one of the ad breaks, which we hear because we watch the International Fight Feed.
Not to brag.
They started talking about, I think it was Tony Schiavone's new cholesterol medication.
During the ad break.
I love it.
During the ad break of the main event, Tony Schiavone made a reference to, we're just normal men. We're just innocent men. He made a reference to that during the fight commercials. Brilliant.
Danielson had a promo from last week, covered in blood. It looked really good. We had a really good tag match, I thought. A bit sloppy at the start, but Mox and Roosh are just made for each other in their sort of brawling. And Roosh and Claudio as well paired off really nicely. I think they're setting up some Ring of Honor world title feud off the back of that.
That's what I got the impression of as well. I think I'd sort of written into my head that it would be Claudio versus Mark. Mm. But yeah, going by this match, I was like, it looks like it's Claudio Roosh at the pay-per-view.
I thought Preston Vance was pretty decent as well, getting mixed up in there. Did a blade job, as did Moxley, of course. Yeah. And the end was Moxley choking out Vance with a chain. Awesome finish.
It was nice to see a Rampage act make it onto Dynamite.
So that was all good. Cuts backstage and Hangman Page, who was watching that match, you know, because he's obsessed with Moxley. And Butcher, Blade, and Kip Sabian beat him up. Dark Order made the save. Then we got one of the best things on the show. Wardlow had a sit-down interview with Jim Ross, and Wardlow is not the greatest promo. And he starts to tell this story about his father, and it had all the sort of cheesy setup of, I said in my review, like an America's Got Talent X Factor style. Here's the sob story before they come out and do something amazing and you get four buzzes.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, I'll strap in for this. By the end, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, this was really good. He told a very, story about his father and how he's had not the strongest relationship, and how, you know, his father went away for a little bit, sort of walked down them, but they then reconciled. But by the time they had reconciled, he had cancer and he got to go see him in an indie show. And like, he was like, "Get one of my first indie shows." And JR Lidgeway was like, "Oh, cool.
Good for you, man.
Good for you." But then, unfortunately, he passed away. And Wardlow says that he had long hair and a beard. And that was the moment when I started growing my hair out and I grew a beard. All of a sudden, Joe cutting off Wardlow's ponytail has so much more emphasis and drama around it than previously. It was just like, I think man buns are lame, and cut the man bun off. Now it's actually like, no, you've somehow, almost by accident, Joe made this personal. But it's not by accident, because the whole setup of this is that Joe knows all of these personal stories because they used to be a tag team.
Yeah. Great, great stuff. The only criticism I have is, oh my God, tell this before you cut the man's hair off.
I did think this, yeah.
Because when they cut the hair off, it was just like, oh, wow, they finally got rid of it. I guess Wardlow wants to change his hair, as opposed to being totally caught up in this brilliant story that Wardlow's just told. And that act of the cutting of the hair becomes a hugely emotional, charged act.
Then the only problem you might have had is if you'd have to find a way to very naturally sneak into conversation. Oh, by the way, I grew my hair out and my beard because my dad had long hair and a beard and then he died of cancer. So then a few weeks later, you can do snip, snip, snip.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it becomes Chekhov's hair.
I watched Netflix's new movie, Your Place or Mine, last night.
And we were unfairly critical of this film.
And they do that all the time. Hey,
and you said it was bad.
Don't you have to go and take your accountancy exams in New York now?
No, I told you that I wanted to be an editor, but I have to do this because I have a child that I need to take care of.
Why don't you just get together with that man you had you had sex with in 2002, but now you're best friends for 2 decades and he lives in New York?
Well, I can't do that because we tried these sorts of things and then I got into another relationship.
I guess it's because you are really neurotic and hyper-focused on your child's health, while he just can't commit, can he? He only does jobs for 6 months as a consultant.
I like how he won't take the stickers off his glasses.
That was actually a good character beat.
Yeah.
Everything else was utterly...
I thought it was quite a good little movie.
But now I'm really looking forward to... I'm always looking forward to Wardlow versus Joe. But now I'm actually looking forward to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I'm glad that we got this beat. Because when Wardlow attacked Joe a couple of weeks back, I remember saying on this show, I was more into the Derby feud.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I am like, oh no, okay, maybe there is going to be something to this.
Mark Briscoe took on Josh Woods next. I really like Josh Woods. I think he's got a really good way he moves around the ring. Had a beautiful, beautiful corkscrew suplex off the apron.
Looks like he wrestles in swimming trunks, though.
Yeah, but that's part of his threatening MMA boy vibe.
Yeah, because a lot of the MMA guys do look like they're wrestling in their swim shorts.
They wear tiny booties. They've got exposed knees. And they've got little swimmy shorts on.
Those tiny booties, very funny. My first note I wrote this, for whatever reason, the Lucha Brothers run down and brawl with Tony Nese.
Yeah, Texas, I guess. That was weird.
Well, they're in the Battle Royal.
Right, okay. Yeah, it felt a bit shoehorned, didn't it?
Well, it's their next feud.
But Mark...
That's what you want for the Lucha Brothers, isn't it? Feuding with Smart Mark Sterling, Tony Nese and...
Aria Davari,
yeah.
Leila Gray. Mark Briscoe, of course, was fantastic.
So great.
Just the noises he makes around the ring. Yeah, what? Hang on.
I rewatched his promo from Rampage quite a few times over. He's so great. Woodsy!
He is. He's so good. Have you seen, you know, it's shared quite a lot, but Jay and Mark would do those just sponsor reads and things like that for Ring of Honor. You know, that like I remember Jay Lethal always used to do, if you've got back pain, kick out. Like every week on ROH TV. But there's Jay trying to do a serious ad read. Mark just nonsense speak. Rip! Hit the froggy bow for the win. Love the froggy bow. It's one of my favorite moves. Adam Cole did an interview. Interesting, this.
Well, yeah, you want to talk about momentum coming to a grinding halt.
I'm starting to think he's not cleared.
It seemed like he said that in this promo, which is that I look out of that ring and I'm not in there just yet. It made me think, like, are you not cleared to wrestle? Because I thought your whole point of, like, I've got some bad news for the AEW locker room.
Eventually. Yeah, I mean, he sort of talked about small victories currently being that, you know, his eye doesn't twitch or he doesn't have to pull over to vomit. But I don't want to, it's awkward because it's a man's health, but at the same time, I feel a bit cheated because he told me he was cleared. I'm not blaming Adam Cole, I'm blaming the booking. And I read a comment that someone speculated maybe that Adam Cole thing was done, rushed early, because they'd accidentally told everyone that Sasha Banks might be there on that show.
That's what I think as well.
So we've gone from all thinking, well, he's definitely having a match at Revolution, to...
Well, he said he was going to have a match at Revolution.
In his opening
promo, the promo when he came back.
Did he?
He basically said, I'll be at Revolution for a match.
And this did not feel like I'm going to have a match at Revolution.
I think it was, though, because they talked about the sort of people he wants to face, and he's got a few ideas in mind. It's just that, the problem with this interview segment is that it achieved nothing.
Yeah. Apart from making me stare into Adam Cole's eyes.
Which are dreamy.
Yeah.
But this achieved nothing. And it felt like this was here because, well, we haven't done anything for the last month and a half since he came back. So, well, I'll just have Renee talk to him. But we won't actually say anything in the promo segment. But at least we put him on TV.
Watch this space, I guess. I'd love him eventually to be a proper babyface challenger to MJF. I think that's probably a massive summer feud.
Honestly, this gave me the vibe that he's going to turn heel immediately.
That's what AEW need right now.
Because he sat down and he was talking, I was like, I don't believe you're a babyface.
I think we've just got too much PTSD from all the other times. He was so nice in this promo.
That's the problem. He was too nice.
MJF then comes out. This is my favorite thing on the whole show. Because the show then cuts the break. We get to see what happens. MJF is just on a mission to make the crowd hate him. Because the Acclaim stuff, it wasn't a great crowd up until this point. You know, quite middling. Not to the extent of the awesome crowds we've had in AEW as of late. But he throws his chewing gum at someone in the crowd, lets a woman kiss him on the cheek, and then sticks up his middle finger to her boyfriend, posed for a selfie, then slapped the fan's phone on the ground. These didn't feel like plants.
No.
I'm pretty sure they were real fans. And the last one, he goes up to another drink and chucks the drink, another fan, and chucks his drink in his face.
It was incredible. A heel being a heel.
every time he did something, the whole crowd went, oh, louder and louder and louder.
Yeah.
He rolls in the ring and he says,
this is quite the line.
Now listen here, you dumb fat S words. We're not on TV yet. I can say whatever the F I want. Oh, sorry about my language. If anyone's got children here, I don't care. And anyway, if we weren't in Texas, maybe they should have been aborted. They should have been.
It was a hell of a line, because then you can almost say, and 3, 2, 1, we're live.
And it's like the crowd are just nuclear. And MJF's there. Oh my God.
It's certainly a way to attract some heat.
He took a crowd who were mostly not disinterested, that's unfair, but they were sitting on their hands a bit, to a nuclear top 10 crowd noise level.
It was the equivalent of, oh no, I've forgotten the guy's name. Oh no, he was the backstage interviewer for TNA.
Jeremy Borash.
This was akin to Jeremy Borash, what he used to do at TNA shows, where he'd go, like, the loudest people will get to go backstage and have their picture taken with Brutus Magnus. And then everyone would just make a massively loud noise to come back from the break.
So it was a lot better than the actual segment. Not that the segment was bad. It's just like it again achieved nothing.
No, I disagree. Okay. I think it's actually added a lot to the MJF character. This told us more about the MJF character in this feud than we have had previously with this.
He invited Christopher Daniels down, and it seemed like there was a setup where Daniels was going to bury Bryan Danielson publicly, because MJF had paid him money. But Daniels immediately goes, MJF tried to pay me money. I'm not going to say the things he wants to. Bryan Danielson is the best wrestler in the world. He did this, 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 and this. Gave us a sort of mini history of early noughties indie wrestling.
Reference King of the Indies. Mm. Bryan Alvarez was in that tournament.
And he says that Max hates him so much because Danielson is the best wrestler in the world and the fans love him.
And I think that's a really interesting wrinkle to MJF's character. We were talking about this in the office earlier, which is, some people point this out from the match he had with Takeshita last week. There was a point during that Takeshita match last week where MJF flipped out of a move and landed on his feet. Mm-hmm. And it was another one of those moments where you go, oh, if Max wanted to, he could just go out and do the indie style and blow everyone away. But he chooses not to because he's a heel. Whereas now, the more I think about it, it's like, no, he chooses not to do it as a character because he doesn't want to have that associated with him, because he has got it into his head that I do not want the fans to love me because people have rejected me throughout my life. So I do not need your affection. However, he also craves that affection for the exact same reasons that he was rejected a lot when he was a teenager. I think it's just a fascinating little character thing. And I think that's what this segment was here to be. It was Christopher Daniels to tell him, like, you're not the best wrestler in the world. Bryan Danielson is. And I think that's why MJF hates Danielson so much. There's so much a dichotomy there. He wants to do this Iron Man match to prove that he can be the best wrestler in the world. But he also doesn't want the crowd to acknowledge that he's the best wrestler in the world. But he also wants them to acknowledge that he's the best wrestler in the world.
He obviously hates adulation, but simultaneously craves it more than anything because of what happened to him at school, and which he said kayfabe character wise in the promos with Punk was he was in that sort of jock group and they bullied him with anti-Semitic abuse, but he of course still wanted to be in with them. So it's very toxic relationship with other people. Oh, I can't let you like me, because as soon as you like me, you'll just turn on me. It's this awful feedback loop that he's got for himself. And yet, I agree, that was in this. I knew that already, though. That's why I say this. I feel like this segment didn't progress anything.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I also don't know if it was the most engaging way to present it.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher Daniels coming out to zero reaction did make me a bit sad, because it's Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
I think the only reason why I would say that this felt like it did progress something is, like, what you mentioned there is that some of this was brought up during the Punk feud. It's never really been established in the Danielson feud. Mm. I don't feel like this aspect of his character has been established in this one. I mean, for example, when he announced that, oh, you've got, I want you to win matches on TV, we had a lot of, you know, people sending in criticisms of like, this is the same as every MJF story. And I feel like it's moments like this, like, no, this is what differentiates. Mm. Like, Max has this framework, but he always twists the framework up to make it, no, it's completely different to the feud before. And just looking at it as you have to do X amount of matches is a very base level at just looking at it, how this feud is structured.
Daniel slapped Max or pie-faced him. And MJF hit a low blow, coward. And then the soul of the earth and Danielson chased him off. There's also not ever been any Danielson-Daniels interaction on screen.
You've just got to know because Ring of Honor.
And they told you on commentary. But, you know, Danielson, in theory, has a whole faction.
Do you know what? on that note, when he said there's a man that he looks to like a father figure, I was like, is he going to bring out William Regal?
Yeah, exactly. After that, we got Jungle Boy versus Brian Cage. Fun match. They always have a good match.
Yeah.
David versus Goliath story. And afterwards, after Jungle Boy won, Christian made his return. And Jungle Boy went up to him, pepper spray. Christian reveals that his arm is no longer injured, took off the sling, hit a kill switch on the top of the ramp.
This segment would have worked better had Jungle Boy not tried to attack him. Because Christian comes out with his arm in the sling and Jungle Boy like goes up to attack him and then Christian attacks him with the mace and then reveals the thing. Was like, well, I don't think the arm would have been out. He was going for you regardless of the arm anyway. If you'd have done the whole like, oh, you can't touch me because of my arm. And then he holds up, then he sprays and reveals, actually, no, my arm is fine. You could have attacked me all along. It probably would have landed a lot harder than it did. I did feel from this, though, that we are setting up Jungle Boy versus MJF for Double or Nothing.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, they were.
Because he was hungry.
He didn't do. He is hungry. He wants some nom nom for his tum tum. Mm. But they were really hammering this idea. He's going for a singles championship. And he's one of the pillars. Mm. That's one of MJF's big thing. I wonder if they're going to set up it's a pillar versus pillar match for Double or Nothing.
Not Sammy Guevara.
Sammy Guevara. It's either him or Darby.
Well, yeah, because he's already taken on Starks. Or Britt. after that, I
would love that to be the main event.
I feel like we're getting Jungle Boy Christian Revolution, though.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because what that show needs is more matches being added.
Rene did the tag title thing we've already covered. The Elite are backstage with some basketballs and AR Fox and Top Flight come in and they're like, well, we want a rematch. And whatever, we've already had that match last week. It is strange how Tony Khan has just gone from never, so rarely doing rematches, they would have numbers next to them. Oh, it's Shida Deeb 2. You know, that would be a huge deal. Now it's, oh yeah, you had a match last week. Here's another match.
Yeah, just do it.
Which I'm not against. It's just, it is a change. And in this particular instance, I'm like, oh, that is a bit too soon.
The thing that struck me more was Tony didn't want to launch the trios division until he had the Elite back. Like, that was his whole thing. He was waiting for Kenny to get cleared before he would launch the trios championships. Mm-hmm. It feels like now that he has the Elite, he's really not that arsed. It's like, you did your best of seven series with the Lucha Bros, and yeah, now I'm really not that arsed.
Well, hopefully we'll get something now, because I don't know if you saw what happened. Mm. There was a very brief Tyler Durden?
Yeah, Tyler Durden, yeah.
From Fight Club.
From Seven.
Very quick flash of the House of Black.
Yeah, which will be a fun Revolution match.
Buddy Murphy versus Kenny Omega.
I mean, that... Yes.
Oh, if they touch, the universe will implode.
I think I want to see Kenny and Malakai.
Mm,
that's what I'm really, really keen to see. I feel like Buddy's got too swole now. He can't move as much as he once did. It's like, it's just, he's too big of an action figure now.
Yeah, he needs the muscles to fend off Rhea.
His muscles are too, he's got less points of articulation since he got bigger. So I just feel like now I'm not really going to get the Buddy Kenny match I thought I could have done. But I think that would be great. I wish there was more build for it towards Revolution. Mm-hmm.
Hangman Page took on Kip Sabian afterwards. Kip's really good. Did a lot to try and give this a story by attacking him backstage. Was wearing Hangman's cowboy hat. But he didn't get an entrance, and he lost to a move that wasn't even Hangman's finisher.
Is he wearing Page's cowboy hat? Page doesn't really wear a cowboy hat. He was just just wearing a cowboy hat, and they were like, disrespect from this man. I was like, it's not his, is it? I actually thought the commentary did a really good job talking about how these two men, one of the first two matches in AEW, Kip Sabian beat Sammy Guevara on the Double or Nothing buy-in, and Paige won the Casino Battle Royale. Mm. I thought that was actually quite a nice... Oh, wow, yeah. What history these two have sort of shared across this company with those two accolades.
That Sabian-Guevara match was really good from what I remember.
It was.
But yeah, one with a dead eye. It was more to set up Mox, Claudio, and Yuta coming out afterwards. And Mox said, look, I know you inside and out. Now, Mox was fantastic here. I know you inside and out. I see you watching my matches. I know what you're going to try and do. But just let me tell you, it's not going to happen. And Hangman's like, I can't have our last match be won by a technical finish.
And you don't want that either.
Yeah. And Mox is like, well, you're right. Let's kill each other. Have a match where no one can stand up again. And Mox eventually says, Texas Deathmatch, but not before, at Revolution, but not before the Dark Order come down. Because Mox has a line like, you haven't even got any friends to talk you out of this dumb idea you're going to commit to.
Yeah, out come the Dark Order. And Paige was very upset that the Dark Order came out here because presumably he told them not to. And the Evil Uno got into Moxley's face. I thought Evil Uno standing up to Moxley was pretty
cool. That was cool.
And they set up a match for Moxley and Uno next week. And that's when, and I love them, Mox, you know, staring down Uno, but just moves past his face to announce Texas Deathmatch to Hangman Adam Page, literally looking through Evil Uno.
What's your thoughts on this Dark Order involvement?
It's not a well-told story. Basically, my thoughts on this. It's Page. At the start, when Paige was doing stuff with the Dark Order, it was really, really cool because it felt so nice off the back of all the Elite stuff. And I think that culminated in that 10-man tag before All Out. And I think since then, the Dark Order are with Hangman Page when someone else needs to say, you've got no friends. And then it's just like they magically appear behind to be like, oh, but what about us?
These annoying imps.
but realistically... And I mean, here's where someone will tell us, well, you need to watch Being the Elite. Mm-hmm. Because from what I watched watching Dynamite, it feels like they're not really ever together anymore. Yeah. They are there when they are needed for plot purposes.
Yeah.
And they're a MacGuffin faction.
There's also so few of them now. Like, there's no Stu Grayson, there's no Alan Angels. It's just three
guys. Preston Vance.
Yeah, no Preston Vance, of course. Negative One wasn't out there. It's just three guys now.
Yeah.
It
doesn't feel like as cool as the group has done previously. We'll say though, when Blackpool Combat Club came out, like when it was Mox, Claudio, and Yuta, and they all came out together, I was like, man, this group is really cool. Mm-hmm. I wish we'd seen more of them together because they are dead cool.
Add a Danielson in there.
Yeah.
Even better. Then we got a Jericho JAS promo. Oh,
you'll never guess what we're setting up here.
Is it a Starks Jericho match?
It is a Starks Jericho match, but before that, he's got to face Daniel Garcia.
My God.
Yeesh.
Runs through the Revolution card, and Stokely Hathaway backstage reveals Hook has been suspended pending investigation after being caught in the armbar thing last week. There's another faction that is only three guys, two of which were not part of the original lineup. The firm is now Stokely Hathaway, Ethan Page, Matt Hardy, and Isaiah Cassidy.
Someone did tell me, though, that the Ass Boys are still listed as the firm on AEW's roster page.
Well, it was me bringing this up a couple of weeks ago, right?
Because you said they're still part of the firm, and I said
they were part of the original firm.
But they're
firm.
Not on the match graphics, not called the firm's The Guns. Yeah.
But Brian Cage is the Embassy's Brian Cage.
Exactly.
The Guns. William Morrissey.
We're not sure if they are part of the group or not.
Ethan Page.
Yeah.
And then...
Lee Moriarty. Yeah.
Stokely Hathaway.
Matt Hardy.
Isaiah Cassidy because and presumably Mark Quinn.
Yeah, because they bought the contracts of Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, and Quinn. But Quinn's out injured, so Isaiah Cassidy is just there to make his little noises.
And then we got the main event for the women. So overall, I you know, this was a very weak show by my opinion. I gave it 60%. Three out of five.
That is the way I would describe it. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad episode of the show. This was not a terrible episode of Dynamite, but weak is a word to describe it.
Well, I think by extension that means bad. It's definitely below average.
No, because for me, like, if something is bad, that makes me, when it finished, I was like, oh god, that was bad. Like, that was an awful show, and I didn't like this, that, and the other. Weak, I think, is it's above that in the sense of that it didn't inspire me any further. Yeah. But there was nothing actively bad on the show. There was some stuff on the show that wasn't good, but not active. There was no Lily winking. You know what I mean? Like, or, you know, Shayna basically being chased backstage by a puppet. Like, there was nothing that...
Can't be that great.
When you're watching it, being like, oh, this is dreadfully terrible. This is insulting intelligence. This was just an okay wrestling show. But by a company that's got ridiculously high standards, it's not. It doesn't match up to it.
Well, before we get into your remaining Omega chats, let's say a wonderful thank you to our $25 a month or more pledge hammers. Always leave the crowd wanting. Brian Moore.
Pick him up. Oh, I missed that one out because I can't say it. Pick him up. Loot Sponge.
Le Meilleur au Monde links the sun.
Lord Chris Zanto.
Too hot to handle. Loddie McCulloch.
The Shule Immin... Oh, sorry, the Shulma Enigma, main event Sami Uso.
Manipulating Manny Omaria.
How'd you like them apples, Marcel Jura?
Marcus, he's got Saul Campbell.
Have a glass of sherry, Martel J. Simmons.
He's got two first names, Matt Howard.
And lastly, for this Hall of Fame class here on the 16th of February 2023, the real boss, Matt Robinson.
Thank you ever so much. We'll be recording our Wrestle Talk extra review of No Way Out 2000 next week.
That's it. We're calling out Monday. That'll be out next Wednesday. Yesterday was the release of After Dark. A clip of it was shared out on our social channels where I talked about buying some new underwear because I realized that the underwear that I was wearing at that point had quite the hole in them. And then that's fine.
You're going to want to cover that up with some green spray paint.
And then do a hip attack.
These are some missed chats from Tuesday's Raw episode. So Giant 420 Ginger says, morning Pete Mincemeat Quinnell and the blonde conqueror Dan Layton. It has been a while since I caught you live. When Jake or Sammy at the chamber, I will be, huh? Still weird to see Cody in WWE, but him having too much creative control doesn't seem to work for future. Mm-hmm. Aaron O'Hamrahamrahan for 17 months in a row. Hey guys, when the Ole chant started, I just smiled. I just want Sammy to win on Saturday. His emotion was real. Also, Otis is the best. Love you guys.
I don't think Sammy's winning.
See, I've gone for him on Wrestle League. I've gone with my heart.
Yeah, I know. There's a few people in the office who have gone for Sammy.
I think it's only me, isn't it?
No, I think Dave's gone with Sammy as well.
Dave's gone for Roman.
Oh, has Dave gone for Roman? No, Dave had a wild choice with who his Joker pick was, I think. I think he put his Joker pick on Edge and Beth.
Yeah.
I think it's a mad choice. I would have put my Joker's on... I got Roman winning and he's my Joker pick as well. I'll do these ones here from Caleb, a.k.a., or formerly known as Mr. Higglesby. He said, I was happy to hear them mention my hometown of Eagle Pass on commentary and was surprised to hear that Blackjack Mulligan was also from there as well. Gem that gem. Also, bring back Wonder Ollie. Bacon Rasher, hi there, lads. Now that Christian has returned, I think AEW needs to get back to basics. Put Cage Page, and the Blade in a cage on Rampage. Any news on the new WrestleTalk watch-along party as of yet? P.S. I hope all of Sonny's predictions are correct. Jam that jam.
He's gone for Sammy.
He has gone for Sammy, yeah. And that is his Joker pick as well. Putting all of his eggs in that Canadian basket.
Watch this space for the watch-along party. Working on it.
Richie R. Kip Sabian versus Hangman ruled. I hope we get more amazing Kip matches on Wednesday nights.
I really like Dan Layton, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite people. DX Solo has been a member for 18 months in a row. Says, hi, guys. I hope you're well. Just wanted to thank you for your intro into Blood on the Clock Tower. I'm now on a stream playing regularly, and it's such a fun time.
Oh, glad to hear it. So, yeah, it's a real fun game.
Mayor of Painsville Dan says, hi, Ollie and Luke. This is German Dan. I hope you're doing well. I know how TK can fix AEW. Come over to Europe and watch 16 competitors from around the world battle in very prestigious tournaments for some ideas. Just like TK, you're also invited to see it. Hashtag 16 carats. John Rye said, also, Ollie, if Luke leaves to work with Stephen Larson, where can I send my audition tape? I got a full head of hair and can grow a beard. Plus, I'm Puerto Rican and I can help you with that Hispanic demo. Much love, you guys. Make my day at work go faster.
We've got a next in line program. We mainly just recruit college athletes at the moment to host the WrestleTalk News.
And just a little note here from Stephen Larson that says, some love to Luke from the Founders, and also hi, Ollie.
What the hell?
Well, you know, like, I don't want to go into too much detail now. An offer has been put out.
What?
I mean, well, I'm not going to use the words contract tampering. Some people might, but I don't think I would use those words.
Stephen, how did they do this on a stream?
I'm going to say no more. I may have to put you in touch with my lawyers and my solicitors.
I am your lawyers and solicitors.
Well, it's fine. Anyway, you know them then.
On that bombshell. Thank you all for joining us here today.
Just as a quick end point here. This episode, we got your poll votes in. 14% thumbs up, 26% thumbs down, 59 thumbs in the middle.
Middling. But is that Trent? How many thumbs down?
26% thumbs, 25% thumbs down.
And how many thumbs up?
15.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely trending down. Interesting. But thank you all for joining us here today. If you haven't already, please press the subscribe button and leave a comment down below. Go check out the rest of the news over on our other channel too. But for now, I've been Ollie Davis. It's been Luke Owen, DAD. Jam that jam. Jam that jam. Jam that jam. Jam that jam. Jam that jam.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.